Have a great day.
And that was Zoe Blunt with the Forest Action Network and an organizer of the caravans to the Unist'ot'en camp, which is resisting several pipelines for frack gas and tar sands oil going through their traditional territory up in northern British Columbia. With the KBOO News, this is Paul Rowland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Lights, Camera, Action, making video easy on Wednesday, September 2nd, 6 p.m. at Portland Community Media. Lights, Camera, Action, a collaboration between PDX Tech for Good and Portland Community Media. This seminar will show you how to make high-quality video for outreach and fundraising using the cutting-edge technology available at Portland Community Media. Again, that's Lights, Camera, Action, making video easy on Wednesday, September 2nd, 6 p.m. at Portland Community Media. 2766 Northeast MLK Jr. Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 6 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next on KBOO, it's Labor Radio.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to Labor Radio Show. My name is Lane Ponce. I'm your co-host this evening, and my guest co-host is...
Susan Stoner.
Thank you, Susan, for joining me. Michael, the regular co-host, is off traveling again, but he'll be back next time around. We also have a guest in the studio, and that is Mr. Ryan Wisner.
Hello.
I pronounce it right?
You did indeed.
Okay. And you'll be talking with us later about some of the things that youthful workers are interested in. I have a couple announcements. One of them is very soon, the Portland Tenants United, if you're interested in some kind of fair housing or deposit problems or any of those things that go along with being a renter, the next meeting is tomorrow, Tuesday, September 1st from 6 until 8 p.m. here at KBOO. If you're interested in that, KBOO can give you information or you can check out www.pdxtu.com. .org. So that is tomorrow at 6 and 8 if you're a renter and you'd like to investigate your rights. The other announcement I have is a far-reaching one, clear out in October. October 10th, we have Climate Jobs PDX, and it's an evening of music and dialogue with labor activists on climate and job crisis. So that might be something to tune into. That's at the AFL-CIO Hall at 3645 Southeast 32nd Portland, just south of Powell Boulevard. If you'd like more information, call 503-286-5850. And the website is climatejobpdx.weebly.com. So that will probably be announced again since it's so far in the future. So what would you like to share with us this evening, Susan?
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about the Browning Ferris Industries case. A decision was made by the National Labor Relations Board on a 3-2 vote, three Democrats versus two Republicans. And it's a landmark decision that will affect temporary workers, subcontracted employees, and franchise employees like those that work for McDonald's. And it's going to impact millions of workers in a positive way. One of the, just briefly, those corporations that use franchises, temporary workers, subcontracted employees, they have sort of developed that model because it allows them to escape all of the labor relations laws that we have in this country and to not have to deal with things like wages and benefits.
And kind of a cop-out.
It's a total cop-out, and it, what it's done is, with this law, what the NLRB has said is that if in that situation, they actually have to sit down at the bargaining table. alongside their subcontractor or whoever else they have this arrangement with. And what that's going to mean is that when you have a subcontractor who's actually a decent employer, and we saw this in the job that I used to have with the union, is that even if you have a good subcontractor, they're not able to bargain higher wages and benefits, because the minute they do, their cost to the parent corporation is going to go up. And the parent corporation is going to gravitate towards the employer who doesn't want to improve working conditions, wages, et cetera, for workers. So this is a really important decision. And not only does this benefit workers, but it also benefits subcontractors and people who are bidding on jobs, because now they'll have a level playing field with other subcontractors, and they won't be undercut by those that are willing to have low wages and no benefits. So whether this ruling survives is really going to depend on the election in 2016, because both the Republican Congress and the current Supreme Court is likely to tinker with it and try to make it go away. And so the survival of this particular decision is probably going to depend on the elections.
Oh, yes. Now, if someone was interested in more information on that, should they contact their congresspeople, or what would be a good avenue to give people their opinion?
At this point, there isn't an issue out there. It's such a new decision. Chamber of Commerce is up in arms, and of course the big, huge corporations are up in arms. So you know they're going to throw a lot of lobbying money at this issue. But it would take a while for the Congress to actually deal with it and for it to work its way through as a law. And then if Obama's still in office, he probably would not sign off on the law. So there's all that whole thing. But in the long run, they're going to definitely work very hard to defeat it.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you for bringing us that news. Now, did you have another one?
Nope.
That was it?
Yep.
Okay. Well, let's get on to Ryan's information about what it's like to be a young worker here in Portland, Oregon, or elsewhere, and where you'd like to go with that as far as union organizing is concerned.
Oh, sure. Well, to begin with, I'm also a Oregon trustee of the Pacific Northwest Labor History Association.
Right. And
I think the association has a lot to offer folks who are younger, who are in unions especially, but also folks who are in non-unionized workplaces. For me personally, the association has brought me in contact with a generation of workers who have gone through the struggles similar to the ones that I experience on my day-to-day life. So the association, some of the things that we offer that have allowed me to make that engagement is our annual conference that we have. It's a moment where workers, retired workers, and scholars and educators come and present. It's a unique conference in that workers themselves and retirees present on the history of their union, or the history of folks in their unions, or the struggles of their unions. Just recently, in our last conference in Seattle, Lionel Yost, who's a retired longshoreman from Coos Bay, brought his own research in to describe the history of the ILWU and Harry Bridges. And I think for me, my specific interest is on oral history. And what I've recognized in all the stories that I've read, those beginning with including Ed Lindquist, who is a former firefighter and also a state legislator, Marvin Ricks, a retired longshoreman, and many others. I recognize that in those stories, there's this moment in that young working life where they experience the power of a union, and that shifted their perspective and their actions from then forward. And oftentimes that came at the advice or the experience of an older worker, or the guidance of another worker. So I think what the association offers to younger workers, as well as to folks who are maybe consider themselves long-time union members, a long-time union, or maybe nearing their retirement, is that cross-generational like connection. So that's what I found inspiring, is to learning more about how The struggles of the past inform the struggles today.
And I think Susan and I both are members of the Pacific Northwest Labor History Association, and we are very pleased to find young people coming in. The interest is there, and we encourage it, of course. And we have another person who's calling in, and he is down in Eugene. Nathan Moore, are you with us on the phone?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right. Hello.
How are you?
Good.
Hello.
Doing great.
We're all here talking about the Pacific Northwest Labor History Association. What would you like to add to its importance to you?
Well, you know, I joined when I was doing my graduate research, and I was doing my work on the archival materials of Harry Stamper. And Stamper was a longshoreman, environmental activist, and union activist in Coos Bay, Oregon. And I, it was the perfect place for me to present as a kind of a fledgling academic, to present my information. And I went to a conference in Portland, and it was just a great experience. I liked the, one thing I really liked was the mix of academic folks and then just, you know, in quotes, regular folks who are just interested in history, workers, history buffs, oral history buffs. That was just a really neat thing, and it wasn't a boring old academic conference, so I really liked that.
Well, thank you, because I was involved in organizing that one, as Susan was, so we're thrilled to get that feedback. And we have another one.
Fun.
We have another one coming up in May.
I'm going to be
here.
Here
in Portland, yes. Now, also, don't you also do a lot of singing?
I do, yeah. I do a lot of music with my wife. We're in a group called Low Tide Drifters, and we do a lot of stuff about kind of the working class experience in the Pacific Northwest, both past and present, I guess.
Right, and you have performed at some of our gatherings for the Pacific Northwest Labor History Association. Can't say that too often because it's kind of a mouthful.
Right, PNLHA, I guess, yeah.
Yes, and we are located on the web under PNLHA if people are interested, and there's a lot of information on the website about joining and the things that we do. So you also are a trustee, right?
Yes.
And what led you to decide that?
I know Ron Verzu, and I know Marcus Widener, who've been involved for years, and just some of a kind of, I guess, veteran statesmen in the PNLHA and involved in labor history in Oregon, and they've always been really supportive of me, and they were just really encouraging about getting involved and offered me concrete ways to start participating at the level at which I was able to. So I found it to be a really welcoming organization. I didn't feel, I still consider myself a really kind of a brand new member, but every time I've gone to a meeting, folks have been really friendly. And so it's an easy organization, I think, to join.
Good. Good to hear that.
Nathan, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like that you have learned a lot of labor history through music and sort of resurrecting some of the old songs. And I was wondering if you've noticed sort of some basic themes that carry on from sort of in the beginning to today.
Oh, well, yeah. So, through that stuff that comes up in music.
Right.
Music or in your research that you may have done.
Well, I think one of the things in particular for Oregon is this notion of not being fooled by the corporate interests. And I think, I mean, that came up in Harry Stamper's songs and work here in Oregon. It's come up in Joe Hill's songs for the IWW. This notion that when the companies come in and offer you all these wonderful things, there's usually these strings attached, so you probably should have some kind of class knowledge or understanding of how you might be exploited. I've seen that come up a lot in music, and often through kind of really humorous ways. So,
did you have any questions for Nathan?
Oh, no. I was just thinking about Nathan's response. I think that's very accurate. I think a lot of times, you know, we hear today about these employers that are coming in and creating jobs for the even just the environmental degradation that they create, but they say we offer these jobs, and even that's part of it is like, well, how long are these jobs going to even how long these folks who have these jobs are able to live in these communities if the degradation is so poor. So I think that the believing everything that the large corporations say and promises, something like Nathan was saying, those lessons and we heard those warnings years before, and they're still true today.
Especially in the environmental arena, that's kind of a new concern. I mean, right. It's not new, but it's bubbling up more.
Yeah, one of the things I think in the West, they really had a sort of an extractive exploitation, you know, take the trees, take the this. And now what we're seeing, in fact, when I was driving over here to the radio station, they had a piece about Grays Harbor. They want to put a big terminal, oil terminal up there. And the fishermen and the locals are saying, we don't want it because if we have one oil spill, our whole livelihood is gone. And then the corporations are saying, you're going to get 150 jobs, you know. So it's, you're right, there it is, the same kind of thing happening
over and over.
And it's
not necessarily to the benefit of the working people.
Well, that's right, or the environment.
Right, right. And I think that's why this particular thing that's coming up in October, the climate jobs at Portland, that they're presenting it with music, and that's something that Nathan is very familiar with, incorporating issues around the climate and labor issues and all of that. So we thank you for your work, Nathan.
All right. Well, thanks.
And we look forward to seeing you in the spring, if not sooner.
That sounds great.
Okay. Thanks for calling in, and we'll carry on unless you have something else you'd like to ask us about or talk about.
No, that's great. I look forward to hearing the rest of the show.
Okay. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
You are listening to KBOO, and we are in the middle of our labor radio show, and you're listening to Susan Stoner, co-host with Lane Ponce, that's me, and Ryan Wisner, who is a new member of Pacific Northwest Labor History Association and also involved in oral histories. So tell us a little more about the oral history research you've done and where you're going with that.
Sure. The PNLHA is a co-sponsor of the Oregon Labor Oral History Project. And what exists right now is a large collection of oral histories that are at OHS, the Oregon Historical Society, done with members of the labor movement who have, some are still around, some have passed. And really, it's a goldmine of experiences and voices that are sadly maybe left out of the narrative of our local history. So some of the things that I've been doing is trying to bring some of those voices to the surface and to the contemporary discussion about local issues. So if you go to the PNLHA website, you'll see a couple features. There'll be more growing, and it's a volunteer organization, and the Oregon Labor Oral History Project kind of runs on volunteer enthusiasm. The folks who collect the stories are volunteers. The folks who edit them are volunteers. The folks who transcribe them are volunteers. So,
and if you had a relative who was in a union, and you know, it's even a way to put the common, ordinary union members' experience into the record.
Exactly. And that's where I am most motivated and interested in, is the rank and file perspective within these unions, who is often the most left out. That voice is the most often left out. It's often the folks who have their words in letters and now emails that get the say about how things were. So recently we did an event sponsored by the PNLHA and Portland State University and a bunch of labor unions out at Pier Park commemorating July 11th, which was Bloody Wednesday, when the police opened fire on striking longshore workers. And we read from a lot of the oral histories, folks like Marvin Ricks, who I mentioned earlier, and Matthew Meehan and Julia Rutila, folks who left their mark on this city. And I think it's really informative when you hear their stories, you hear their words read at the scene of one of the city's most important labor events.
That was an important strike in ways that I think most people don't realize, is that the companies had imported thugs who were, you know, whooping on the strikers. And they made the mistake of actually shooting at a car that had a U.S. senator in it. And it actually changed his mind. And he then sponsored labor protection legislation that passed through Congress. So Portland made its little mark there.
Now, when was that? What year did that take place?
1934. That was the big strike on the on the longshore on the whole West Coast. And I think for me, the also recognition is that kind of here, the Upstart Union, which was the ILA local at the time, they had nothing money-wise going into that strike. They had to rely on the community, and the community definitely benefited from the strike as well. So because they had no resources, they had the outreach to communities and groups to run their commissary kitchens, to get, you know, make sure that, you know, people had places to stay during what was a couple month strike. So I think what that strike demonstrated is that how the strength of breaking out of those sectional struggles and seeing it as a class issue, seeing this strike as a class issue and the community being a part of it and the union being a part of the community. And that's always a great lesson to remind us of.
Wouldn't you say, I mean, you had mentioned earlier when you were talking that people, you liked seeing the power, you know, kind of realizing the power that's behind the labor movement and what it can do. For me personally, I also experienced the beauty. And I think when you were talking about folks, you know, sort of with nothing, they did this. So I think there's not only power, but there's beauty and there's courage. And those three things together are really the union movement at its most best.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's the love, also in a way, it's the love for the people alongside you more than the hate against the boss that's really going to allow you to prevail in a union struggle. I still, that's been my personal experience. That's what I felt on the job. And that's what I think strong organizing results in.
Right. Instead of the hate and all the negative stuff to go with the positiveness that's available in a community of people. Do you think we can do more of that? I mean, we always hear about how unions are dying and they're decreasing in power. What do you think about the future of the union movement?
If this case survives, the Browning-Ferris case survives and that rule stands, that's going to do a lot, because it's going to make it, it's very hard to organize a union because the management has so much power, money, and time to defeat you. So, and one of the tricks they did use is subcontracting. And so this is sort of a counter to that. So I think ease of organizing is the real key, and because the most recent survey shows that the millennials favor unionism by a huge majority, like 83%, I think is what I read. So I think the circle's turning, and I think people are starting to look at, you know, people power versus political machinations.
Like the 1% movement that came up and kind of is gone a little bit underground now, but do you think that's connected in with the new movement for union strengthening? As a young person,
I think there are a lot of folks on the job in the service industry where I've worked for the last decade or so, looking for change and or to improve their lives. Everyone on their job is looking to improve their lives, and a lot of times the only options that some of us are given is to go to jump to another job and hope that that one's better than the other one, or to advance through management. And usually, only one in 10 of us get that management job. And and so a lot of folks are looking for answers on how to improve their material conditions. And I think the job of organizers and unions and folks who have experienced that power in the past, folks who is to show, to help demonstrate and show how young workers can organize. So I think starting younger folks who are, like I said, these oral histories show that it was at the first jobs that people had, that they had that experience that changed their life and showed, you know, where power is and what class they're a part of and how to affect change. So I think we need to start instructing or being more present with the young workers in order to show them that there are options beyond becoming a boss or to constantly jump from job to job to improve your your conditions, and that is through organizing with your fellow workers.
Right, and that jumping from job to job, the flip side of that is that the owners or the managers will say, well, if you don't like this job, go somewhere else. And so that undermines the whole idea of staying put.
Right.
It's not a good situation in the workforce right now, I don't think. So it seems
And it prevents it prevents you from developing a human relationship with your boss. Now, of course, when you're dealing with a mega corporation that has a place, you know, in New York City and you're here in Oregon, it's pretty hard to be a real person to the people that are making those life-changing decisions for you. But I think that the jumping from job to jobs tends to push management into seeing you basically, I think of it as Kleenex, but, you know, something that they use and can throw away without compunction or even any consideration. And I saw that a lot in the larger companies that I dealt with, that there was just a real...
disposability.
Yeah.
We're just considered disposable.
Kleenex, yeah.
Yeah.
I shouldn't use a brand name, right? Susan, why don't you tell us what your experience was? Where did you come into the labor union in what way? What inspired you?
I was unique. I had a unique upbringing in that my dad was management. He started a small company here in Portland, and then it grew. And then my brother joined. But they both loved the union. They loved the union so much they got in trouble with the NLRB because they wanted their part of their company to go union. The rest of it was, and they wanted this other little unit to go union. So I grew up thinking unions were good. So that's basic thing. But then my first political act was actually demonstrating at the Fry Roofing strike, and somebody out there may have been out there with me. I was out there with Julia Rutila, saw a cop hit her on the head. His name was Officer Lopez. Always remember that. He took her picket sign and bopped her on the head. And then I was working at a university in the South. And I put that together with the fact when I was working in a university in the South, the white boys were running it. Blacks never advanced up to the top. And I noticed, though, that the one time that they would change is when they got sued. So I put that together with liking labor unions, having a class analysis, and said, I think I'll be a labor union lawyer. So that's how that happened.
That's good thinking. I came into it just because I didn't know what the issues were. I worked at the telephone company. And I was a student, and I needed to work because we were living on air. And so I didn't really know what the issues were. And I kept trying to find out. And the company actually gave me more information than the union because they were thinking that I was a crossover if I didn't. I was asking too many questions at such a late day. And then my dad, who I didn't realize had been a carpenter and was a carpenter. He was a union member when he was a carpenter because we had a farm. He called me up and he said, so you are not thinking about crossing the picket line, are you? Are you? I said, well, you know, I need the money. He goes, do not cross the picket line. We will send you money. I said, okay.
Yay.
And then I went into it because I couldn't get that information. After that, I knew that the union had the information, and that's how I got involved. And I was very young. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, like my 20s. Mm-hmm. So then that was a good job, too. And you don't see those kind of jobs floating around anymore.
No, you don't. In fact, I just read that just temp workers in this country are almost 3 million of them. And temp workers, of course, have no benefits, low pay, no job security whatsoever. Yeah. And that's the other thing about unionization that I think is really probably the key thing. People should think of it as job insurance, because as soon as you're in a union, you can't be fired unless for just cause. You can't be fired because your boss's nephew needs your job. You can't be fired because you don't suck up. You can't, you know, there's all these things that you see that are so unfair in the workplace that when it's put up against just cause, you win, not management. And so I just came to believe that the basic thing for the individual in unions is a job security insurance, just like you have car insurance and you have fire insurance, same with that.
Mm-hmm. That's a nice way to look at it. I like that. Okay, let's wrap this up. We've made it through a half an hour, and I think we're all in favor of unions, yes?
Yes.
And the Pacific Northwest Labor History Association also. So, Ryan, you want to say anything as a farewell?
Sure. If you are interested in knowing more about the Pacific Northwest Labor History Association or the Oregon Labor Oral History Project, you can go to PNLHA.org and find out more, as well as joining the organization. And put it on your calendar, May 2017. 16. Our annual conference will be here in Portland, and it will be a great opportunity to learn about the organization and hear a lot of great stories.
And we really would like to reach out to young workers. That's one of our goals for sure. Susan, what would you like to say in wrap up?
Oh, I just think it's great that people are interested in labor history, and I think it's great they're interested in the labor show. So thank you for listening.
All right. Thank you all, and thank you, Nathan Moore from Eugene. That was nice of you to call in, and that's it for tonight. Thank you. Join us next week.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the other September 11th. Film screening and discussion about the lasting impacts of the U.S.-funded military coup in Chile on September 11, 1973. The event will take place on Friday, September 11th at 7 p.m. at the Fifth Avenue Cinema in Portland. This film screening will include two 30-minute documentaries that focus on Mapuche land reclamation and language revitalization, as well as a discussion with the filmmaker about the specific laws that have been used to target the indigenous Mapuche people since the dictatorship began in 1973. Again, that's the other September 11th, on Friday, September 11th, at 7 p.m. at Fifth Avenue Cinema, 510 Southwest Hall Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a